This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Mekhi Becton, ladies and gentlemen. Human beings that large should not run as fast as Mekhi Becton did. And if you like people just abusing other humans, the Mekhi Becton tape is for you.
Denzel Mims with another monster score of 70 yards.
Quick pass to Crowder trying to get him out of space. Slips a tackle, and there he goes. Crowder, it's a foot race, and Crowder is in there. A 69-yard touchdown.
Darnold escapes, trying to buy himself some time. Fires end zone. It's caught. Incredible play by Darnold.
He'll hit immediately when he got the handoff.
You know what?
The Q-inator.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the TOJ Digital Studio, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And it's time to take a look at the film with XNO Quick Hits featuring the man who does Blewett's Blitz over at JetsXFactor.com, Mr. Joe Blewett. Joe, what's going on, buddy?
Nothing. You know, seven more games left. It's what we talk about every week, counting it down week by week to get that first pick in cement. And that's a lot with what 90% of Jets fans want right now is to get that number one overall pick. So, like you said, it's a weekly battle to root against these Jets. It's kind of like conflicting, or you're watching the Patriots game and you kind of want them to win, but at the same time, for the long term future, you want them to lose. So I'm ready to move into the future where I get to just root for the Jets to win.
If nothing else, Joe, at least watching the film this week was probably the most fun that it's been all season. And strangely enough, part of that is because of Joe Flacco. Now, he made some mistakes, especially with that interception late in the game and then taking that sack. But overall, I thought this was one of the best quarterback games of the season. In fact, probably was the best quarterback game of the season. Would have been nice if it was Sam Darnold doing it, but Flacco looked pretty good.
Oh, yeah, it was easily the best. This is the only above average or about average quarterbacking I've seen this season. And again, it is an indictment on Sam Darnold. And I get that people are going to say, the whole wide receiver situation, which is a part to do with it. But again, we've talked about this a lot on this podcast. It's not so black and white. Darnold has struggled regardless of who the receivers were. There's moments where he would have struggled regardless if it was Perryman or Mims running those routes instead of Berrios or Cager, because there are situations where those guys were open where he just did not pull the trigger. So does it make a difference if Perryman's wide open for, by 3 yards or if it's Cager? Like, it doesn't really matter. If the guy's open, you got to hit him. So Darnold was struggling regardless of who the receivers were. But, Flacco was good. Obviously, a couple of really nice throws, like you said. The interception that he threw versus what looked to be an inverted cover two. Forced the ball, with 6 minutes left in the game, 6-7 minutes left in the game on first down. The Patriots just went on a 5 or 6 minute drive, 5 to 7 minute drive. And he had two checkdowns that were wide open. You actually had a crossing route. I forget who the crossing route was from. It was from the right side. That was open if he hit it, if he seen it early. There was the check down in Gore who was open, and there was another check down that was open. They ran a Yankee concept, and he thought that the deep defensive back was going to jump on the over route from the right side of the field, and that safety did not, or that defensive back did not, and picked up the post, which was Mims. And so it was double teamed. He threw the ball anyway, not, you know, failing to read that defensive back like he should have. He didn't even really see that defensive back and just shucked the ball up there. So he read inside leverage and tried to throw it inside to Mims without, again, failing to read the entire field. And then later in the game, you have, was it second and three? And Gore is wide open on a, not, no, sorry, not Gore, it's actually P. Ryan who's wide open on another check down. He tries to hold the ball, force it down the field a little bit farther, or he's looking down the field a little bit farther for something open deep. Instead of checking it down, could have easily been first and 10 with, what, a minute and a half to go, just getting a field goal, getting 20 to 25 more yards, with P. Ryan easily running for a first down to the 40-yard line or so, or it, you know, if not even farther. So bad mistake there. There's another mistake later in the game where, or not, or I think it was the second half of the game, but Perryman was streaking down the right sideline, and he threw the ball too short and inside, where he easily could have hit Perryman for another touchdown. That could have been three touchdowns of the game and four if Perryman actually caught one ball that he was supposed to, that he dropped. So that's a touchdown missed by Flacco because, again, if the receiver is streaking up the sideline, you want to lead them and throw them to the outside, especially if the guy's inside leverage. He didn't do that. It did lead to a pass interference that Perryman picked up, but still he missed out on a touchdown there. You also had another situation in the game where he was a little bit late to hit Mims, and if he did hit Mims earlier on the unders concept, he could have ran for a first down, but unfortunately didn't. And there's another one where he overthrew Mims. Two of those last ones were because of pressure, both allowed by a combination of Adoga and Alex Lewis. But overall, other than those mistakes, he was on time. He was accurate. That one throw to Crowder was the best throw of the season, in my opinion, on that corner route. That's literally the only spot he could have put that ball, and he put it there. It was absurd that he was able to fit that ball in there. Obviously hit Perryman, you know, for two touchdowns. The one was wide open, but the one Perryman dropped, and the other one wasn't a really good was really good in terms of leading Perryman deep down the field on the right sideline again, hit Mims a couple times. So he was really efficient. It was really, you know, nice to see. It was almost too nice to see because if Joe Flacco and Frank Gore won us a football game to take us away from Trevor Lawrence and go down to the number two pick, I'm sure a lot of fans would have went absolutely nuts. But it was definitely fun to see some good quarterbacking.
Part of the reason that he was able to do good quarterbacking is because he had a healthy wide receiving core. First time this season that Jamison Crowder, Denzel Mims, and Rashad Perriman all played together, and they all looked good. Crowder only made two catches, but one of them was that outstanding play in the end zone. As you said, great throw by Flacco, but an outstanding catch by Jamison Crowder. Rashad Perriman with the two long touchdowns, and Denzel Mims making some nice plays, showing off that yak ability. Talk to me about what you saw from the receivers, because I thought they were pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was really nice to see the wide receivers all together again. I think there are definitely some people who look at the situation as too black and white, where people are saying, oh, if Darnold was in this game, he would have had just as much success as Joe Flacco. I don't think that's true. Again, I think I'm looking at it a little bit too simplistically. But yeah, it was definitely nice to see those guys healthy. Crowder, like you said, you know, was minimal on the stat sheet, you know, minus the touchdown. There was that other really nice catch he had going, you know, running from left to right. Really nice hands catch. Obviously, the touchdown catch was, you know, just as nice. Actually, I would say it's a little bit less nice of a catch than it was a throw. The throw was beautiful, but toe drag on the sideline, awareness of the sideline, the hands catch, it was beautiful from Crowder as well. So good job on that one. There's another two times, I believe, earlier in the first half where Mims was targeted and Crowder was open deep down the field where it could have been a touchdown or a big game where Flacco didn't see him, but instead targeted Mims, which is okay because I think both those times he connected with Mims, maybe one of the times he didn't, but regardless, Crowder got open. And when he, you know, got the ball thrown his way, he did his job. Perryman, again, could have been a four touchdown game. Like, let's be honest, it was a really, really nice game. And for the people out there, you know, I've been one of the guys who's been a little bit of a Perryman stan. I think that on the field when he plays, he's actually a pretty good wide receiver. But the problem with him is his health, which we've obviously seen, we've seen that take part in his 2020 season with the Jets because he's not been healthy. But when he is on the field, I think he's pretty solid. So this game was a huge showing for him. Obviously, the one touchdown that he dropped, he didn't look in the ball fully. He was looking towards the towards the paint to try to see where he can get his feet in or if he can get his feet in before he secured the ball. So that's why he dropped that. But the one touchdown to the left sideline, he used another one of his hop step releases, which I go over in my show a lot. Did a lot with the Buccaneers. Used that again there. Really screws up the defensive back's timing, and then he blew past the left side of the DB. Caught the touchdown on the left side of the field, streaking down the field. Later in the game, the touchdown where he broke the cornerback's ankles, he used a shuffle release, did a really good job. The corner, because he did eat the turf, or he got caught by the turf monster a little bit, but Perryman forced him into that position because he used a shuffle release, did a good job squaring the guy up, and the guy hopped back onto his heels, and that's why he trips. So good job by Perryman on that. Completely roasted that guy. Touchdown. And then again, that one time later in the game where Perryman beats, I believe it was McCourty, Jason McCourty, up the right sideline, just blows right by him, just pure speed. The McCourty angles his hips off, and you had Perryman who just took it with that 4-3 speed, gets by him. Flacco puts the ball too short and inside, and he has to work back to the ball, draws a PI instead of it being a – whatever it would have been, 30, 40-yard touchdown for Perryman. So he did great. And then Mims, too. Mims, this is the most impressive game to me. He keeps taking steps in the right direction. Nice body control, nice hand catches. The physicality in the routes is good. I think he did a little bit better job with his stems and his releases this game. Good job with his hands. Breaking across guys' faces and defeating the hands, which he struggled with a little bit the first two games. I think he took a step in the right direction in this game. Another really, really nice route on that stop route over the middle is another situation where he could have cleaned up himself technically in terms of committing to his stop step and not lunging a little bit too much into it. So his technique wasn't the best in terms of like how much he can actually clean it up, but he still got out of the route really, really quickly, which is super impressive. Again, a guy who's 6'2", 6'3", who's getting out of breaks really sharply, and not having the best technique is super encouraging for the future, because I know he's going to continue to round that stuff out, especially considering that he didn't run a ton of routes at Baylor. So once he rounds that stuff out and you take that freaky athleticism plus good route running, he could be pretty ridiculous in that aspect. So that's a positive. There's another route over the middle, which I'm sure nobody's going to bring up, but it was a mesh concept, and he did a really good job with his patience in his route and pushing his route a little bit more vertically upfield to set the natural rub of that mesh concept in. So again, it's not something that a lot of people are going to talk about, but it's a really little nuance of his route running that was really positive, because a lot of young guys cut it flat because they just want to get open right away. But he had a really good understanding of how to get open on that route, and it worked perfectly. That was the play that I believe it was a Doga got the holding, or Doga allowed a pressure, so Flack saw Mims a little bit late. So he got tackled as soon as he caught the ball, but it could have went for more if Doga actually blocked well. But that was a really nice play. And then obviously there was the two plays of Yak that he was showing. Really physical dude, has good contact balance, can run with the ball after the catch. And a lot of people say, oh, well, the whole thing in college where he didn't get a lot of Yak, which again, that's why stats are sometimes too simple, because the reason, and we talk about this a lot with him in Baylor, the reason he didn't get Yak was because in that offense, he ran a lot of fade routes. So how many guys are going to get Yak after fade? That's not conducive to fade. So it wasn't the fact that he couldn't get Yak. It's the system that he was running or that was ran at Baylor wasn't conducive to him getting Yak yardage. So he is able to do it. He just wasn't put in a position to do it. So once the Jets start using him on more overs and drags and slants, I can even see him on tunnel screens or shield screens or smoke screens, whatever it may be, because he does have that ability, and he showed it this week. J.C. Jackson's a good tackling cornerback, and he planted him on his ass. He had a ton of really positive plays from both Yak, from catching the ball outside of his frame, from good hand technique to catching the ball to route running. to understanding of route nuance in terms of concepts and how to set up your routes to get open on that mesh concept. So really, really positive game from him. I'm really excited for his future with the Jets.
Joe, let's talk a little offensive line and running back. I thought that some of the vitriol directed towards Adam Gase for giving Frank Gore so many carries was not well-founded because, quite frankly, I haven't seen much from LaMichael Perine that would make me optimistic about him. And I understand that for the future, you're hoping Perine could turn into something. But if you're Gase and you're the coach, you got to go with who's running the ball better. And let's be honest, Frank Gore has been running the ball better than LaMichael Perine, so I understand why he's getting more carries. I have seen some things from Perine in the passing game and with blitz pickups that have been nice, but as far as just carrying the ball, haven't been super impressed. And then with the offensive line, when Becton was in there, really, really good. When he came out, not as good, but still, I thought this was the best overall performance by the offensive line this season, particularly from Fant and Van Roten. Van Roten has looked much better the last couple of weeks from everything I can see.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely their best performance. I think something to note also is obviously the Patriots not necessarily having the best pass rush group in the NFL. So something you should, note down. It's not like they're playing a top-notch rushing team or anything like that. So you do want to be fair. But yeah, overall, Fant played really well. I thought Connor McGovern played well. This game, he had a few nice pancake blocks, which is a positive, or at least one that I could think of off the top of my head that was really nice. Greg Van Roten, again, like you said, started off the season pretty slow, but the last couple of games, not allowing a lot of pressures, doing pretty well, picking up some stunts. Had a few plays this game, or at least two, where he was not the primary blocker on a defender, whether it be 3-tech, 5-tech, 1-tech, whatever it was. And then he would drop the hammer or the plow, as some people like to call it, and absolutely just destroy guys, lifting them off their feet. I put up a really nice play of that on my show, so that was kind of fun to watch him lift the grown man off the ground, and he literally tosses a defensive lineman about 2-3 yards in the air, which is always definitely fun to see on tape. So another positive game from him. Alex Lowe struggled again. A lot of it's just simple technique with him, where it's the little things where he's throwing punches as he's retreating and not really throwing a lot into his punches. So you see his hands get defeated pretty easily, which is obviously a problem. There's a lot of times where he's late to pick up a stunt or a blitzer, which puts his, whether it be his center or his left tackle, in a bad position because he's not helping them pass off those stunts. So that's not a positive. We see a lot of McGovern or whoever it may be next to him struggling a little bit because of him. So he's been for sure a weak link. Chuma Dogo wasn't brutal this game when he came in, but again, there was two of those Mims plays where Flacco was either late to see Mims or completely avoided him because of the pressure that Adogo allowed in the pocket and forced Flacco to move a little bit. He also had the holding play. He got beat a couple times, so he wasn't good in this game either. He wasn't dreadful, but he definitely wasn't good. Becton, it was a similar game to last game where I said he was solid, but he wasn't top-notch Becton. Like we saw, versus the Bills the first week or the Niners or, whatever game you want to throw in there that you thought was his best game. The earlier games were definitely better. The last couple of weeks, he seems to be playing injured a little bit. There was a couple plays this game where, whether it be a down block or him kicking somebody out, where he completely demolished the guy in front of him and the Jets ran behind him and they were super successful. So I don't want people to think that those plays didn't exist because there were two off the top of my head that existed that they got a first down and plus yards. Because of him. One was a Gore play where he created so much room in the C gap, or actually it was the B gap, because of how far he ran the defensive end off of the ball, where Gore was able to kind of bend his track a little bit farther to the outside and avoid some pressure from the inside, where if Becton didn't run his guy so far to the outside, it would have probably been either a run stuff or a gain of 1 or 2 yards. But because of Becton did his job, and completely moved his guy. Actually, he went far and beyond and above his job, and completely moved his guy 5-6 yards. From his original alignment, the hole was wide open, and again went from 1 or 2 yard gain if you had a Kelvin Beachum there or a regular left tackle, and went to a 15 to 16 yard gain just because of Becton. So there were definitely those plays, but then there was also two plays where some of the technique that I said he needs to work on showed up. One specifically where he's moving, I think it was number 91. He was running him to the outside in like a base block. And Becton was a little bit like too non-committal with his hands, where he kind of just opened up his hips and was just working against the defensive end with his right hand instead of, you know, squaring the guy up, getting two hands and running him off the ball. He was a little bit too confident in his power, and the defensive end was able to disengage and make a tackle. And there was another play where it was a direct example of what I want him to fix. I think it's the biggest thing he needs to fix is, you know, well, at least in the run game, was he comes off the ball, he squares up it's a defensive back, I think it's a safety who is in the box and who he goes against, and he does a good job throwing the safety 4 or 5 yards back, but because he doesn't maintain his grip, he doesn't get guys close, he doesn't climb that tree, you know, air quotes, as you'd like to see, and get your hands on guys, grip them, and run them off the ball. Instead, he kind of tries to go for the highlight play a little bit too much, in my opinion, where he tries to throw guys. And what happens is when you throw guys, obviously now you're disengaged. And when you're disengaged, the safeties, the defensive backs, you know, Becton is a freak of nature and a freak athlete, but they're still more athletic than him. You know, acceleration, change of direction, you know, lateral movement, whatever it may be. So he disengages with them. On this play, he disengages, and then the guy sidesteps him and makes a tackle, where if he, you know, if he were to, you know, grip the guy and run him off the ball instead of trying to throw him off the ball, it could have been a bigger gain for the running back. So I definitely want to see him fix that a little bit. I know the him throwing guys looks great, but technically it's not the best thing you want to do in terms of consistency of maintaining your blocks. So I definitely want to see that fixed a little bit again. He's a rookie. There are things to improve. He's not an elite tackle yet, but I think he's on the track to be that. And I think he's already a very good tackle, or at least a good tackle. So, again, don't get that twisted at all. But there's definitely some things he needs to improve on technically. He can't just rely on his power all the time. It's not always going to work. So a good game for Becton, but, again, some things that I want to see improved. And then, like you said, with the running backs, Gore has – listen, I think earlier in the season he was missing some holes that were a little bit frustrating, but recent weeks he's just been hitting the holes that are there and getting consistent yardage. And, again, you see the improvement in the Jets' offensive line. Like, how much better – Like realistic. I know the Jets suck this year, but their run blocking from just last year to this year is leaps and bounds better. It really is really impressive how much they've gotten better, and I think Joe Douglas is going to continue to address that. So it's nice to see that a GM with a heavy focus on offensive line is improving that offensive line. Again, the team is bad, and there are a weak link or two. Obviously, when you have Josh Andrews playing, when you have Alex Lewis playing a lot of reps, and you have guys like Chuma Doga in the game a lot, then yeah, you're going to struggle at times. But, you know, the GVRs, the fans, the Bextons that he brought in are definitely making an impact. That's a positive, which obviously helps out guys like Gore, who's been pretty consistent. Again, he's not going to break a 90-yard run, but he's been pretty consistent over the last few weeks. So he was a positive from this game. And like you said with Piran, I think he's improved a little bit with his pass protection. He's had a nice catch or two. He obviously had a nice touchdown run a couple of weeks ago. But in terms of his vision, I think he's struggling a little bit. He kind of just looking for the first gap that he can hit for a yard or two, and he's not being as patient as he should be in a zone blocking scheme. You want to be a little bit more patient and read leverages. You know, listen, if you're running the ball to the left and everybody's leverage on your offensive line is inside leverage of those defenders, then you're probably going to want to cut it back and vice versa. You know, if you're running through the B gap and everybody on your offense has outside leverage on the defenders, then you're probably going to want to bounce to run outside. But he's had a little bit too much of just seeing a little bit of green grass and trying to hit it right away, or, you know, as they call it, bang the run. He's been doing that a little bit too much. And again, one specific example this game, I forget if it was inside zone or mid zone, but he has a hole, you know, 2 yard hole. If he ducks his head and runs into the back of a couple of offensive linemen, that's what he does. And if he read the leverages properly, and again, it wasn't a big ask. It's not like, oh, you know, freeze frame as he already hits the other hole and this hole was open. It wasn't like that. Like, I'm not Monday morning quarterbacking that bad. The hole was open on the backside pretty early. And it was because of, like I said, all the hats of the Jets offensive lineman were inside leverage of all the defensive hats. And you also had a linebacker who was going to fill a hole, and his hips were completely open to the outside. He hits the outside where all the defenders are going, instead of sticking his foot in the turf and bending the run backwards and hitting it for potentially, you know, 5 to 10 yards. Instead, again, he bangs that hole, which kind of sounds screwed up now that I say it. That's the terminology. And he runs for 2 yards. So his vision's definitely struggling with his vision a little bit. So I want to see that improved. from Piron. So I get why Gore is playing a little bit more in terms of the coaching, because that's the problem right now, is you have a GM who wants to build for the future paired with a coach who's trying to save his job. So he's going to play the Becktons when he's injured. He's going to play Mims if he's hurt in practice or whatever. He's going to play Darnold if he hurt his shoulder, because he needs to win. He needs to build that resume for wherever he may be coaching next. Pray to God it's not with the Jets, obviously, but that's a little bit of the issue. So from the tank standpoint, from the Jets wanting to build a team for the future, I'm sure that all the Jets fans want to see Piron get 20 carries and Gore get 5 for it. But for his coach who's trying to win, I get playing Gore more, because at this point, Gore is the better running back.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
When migraine strikes, you're faced with a choice. Ride it out with the trade-offs of treating, or push through the pain and symptoms. With Ubrelvy or Ubrogepant, there's another option. Ubrelvy is a prescription medicine used to treat migraine attacks in adults and is not for prevention. One dose works fast to eliminate migraine pain. Most people had pain relief, and some even had pain freedom within 2 hours. Treat it anytime, anywhere, without worrying where you are or if it's too late. People took Ubrelvy within 4 hours of a migraine attack.
Do not take with strong CYP3A4 inhibitors or if allergic to Ubrelvy. Allergic reactions can happen and may occur hours to days after use. Get medical help right away if you have swelling of the face, mouth, tongue, or throat, or trouble breathing. The most common side effects were nausea and sleepiness.
Ask your doctor about Ubrelvy, the anytime, anywhere migraine medicine. Find more product information at Ubrelvy.com or call 844-4-U-B-R-E-L-V-Y. Sponsored by AbbVie.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Joe, let's shift to defense and talk about the front seven. No Quinnen Williams in this game, but Foley Fatakasi was pretty dominant. He made some really good stops, especially in the run game behind the line. And then Harvey Lange, say what you want to about him, but boy, what an effort. That one play where he almost had Cam Newton twice and then darted upfield 15 yards to make a stop after Newton completed the pass was very impressive. Tell me what you saw when you looked at the film.
Yeah, overall, starting with the defensive line, Fatakasi was a little more quiet to begin the season, but he's starting to show up a lot now. And again, for a guy who was, what, a sixth-round pick in his third year, I think he's a long-term building piece at nose tackle. Super powerful dude. Like, when he gets his hands on you and he's trying to drive you backwards, he'll just absolutely dominate centers. He did that multiple times this game and getting multiple run stuffs, the one being on fourth and one. Ran the center right into the running back, right into the mesh point, caused a fumble. Another time in the game, he got wham blocked. He noticed the wham block coming from the fullback, attacks the wham blocker, completely blows up that wham block and blows up the running back. In that process, he was a menace on the inside, so that was a positive to see from him. John Frankenmeyer's had another nice run stuff or two. This game, a little more quiet than some other games, but still definitely a positive game. Basham had a nice play in the front seven. He was on the left edge of the defense or the right edge of the offense. And they run a jet sweep, and he does a really, really nice job widening with one of the blockers that was coming to block him, not allowing the jet sweep to get outside of him. So obviously, you know, you'll have a lot of inexperienced guys knife inside, and then they'll bounce the run outside and get it towards the sideline. But he did a really nice job widening, getting hands on the blocker, forcing the cutback of the wide receiver, and then disengages, drops his weight, and makes the tackle on the receiver. So he had a positive player too, which is a good thing to see. Huff struggled a little bit. Again, undrafted guy, last game pretty quiet. This game was relatively quiet as well. And the one touchdown run that Cam Newton had, or one of them, He was targeted on a read option. He shovels a little bit too far inside. If Cam Newton was to hand the ball to the running back, it would not be his responsibility. It would have been one of the guys on the inside. I think it was Ashton Davis who was filling it, or it was actually Lange who was filling an interior gap. Huff had to make sure that, he shuffled down the line of scrimmage a little bit to play the running back. If the running back were to bend the run back, but he has to make absolutely sure that he's not going to get outflanked to the sideline and Cameron's not going to outrun him. He shuffles a little bit too much down, into the box, and Cam Newton pulls the ball, runs it around him for the touchdown. So he got targeted there, some inexperience from him. Other than that, with the front seven, I think Hewitt struggled. He missed a few tackles, didn't really make too big of an impact. Jordan Jenkins looked completely lost on a couple of plays. A lot of, on a base level, he has good awareness and will maintain his edge pretty well. But when you start throwing jet sweeps and orbit motions and return motions and all these things by Jordan Jenkins, he starts to get distracted by contact a little bit. When there's a lot of eye candy, he just looks at the first guy running at him and just goes to blow up that guy, and he'll take himself completely out of the play, which he did in this game. I forget exactly what the example was, but if he were to just keep his eyes up, he could have made a tackle on the running back for a tackle for loss. But a puller comes, I believe it's a one back power, and if he were to just see the mesh point, attack the mesh point, and stay a little bit patient, he could have had a tackle for loss. But he attacks the pulling guard, and the running back just bounces it right outside of him. So he's been super quiet, and a really, really, really disappointing year from Jenkins on the defense. So he was a negative. Lange, again, as a role player, I'm definitely fine with him. As a special key special teamer, good. But obviously you don't want him starting, full-time reps. I think in the run game, he's pretty solid. He definitely plays with his hair on fire, the play you mentioned. He blitzes up the A-gap, almost has a shot at Cam Newton. But the running back fills, chops or cut blocks. Lange is not able to get to Newton at that point. He gets back up, maintains his balance, or he just maintains his balance. I don't think he falls down at that point. Comes to sack Cam Newton. He goes a little bit high. Cam ducks out of it, rolls away. Lange gets up again and starts to chase down Newton. Newton throws the ball underneath, and then Lange runs 10 yards down the field to make the tackle. And if you don't like that stuff watching film, especially on a team who sometimes doesn't look like they're trying, especially when you have guys like Pierre Desir, who we'll talk about, seeing a guy, almost get a sack, get cut blocked, get back up, run, miss a sack because he goes too high, get back up, run for the sack again, ball gets thrown, changes direction, runs to the receiver, makes a tackle. That's a hell of a play. That's how you earn a contract. You absolutely love to see that. So he made a few nice plays in the run game in terms of taking on blockers, taking on the running back, making tackles. He showed some sideline to sideline speed that I didn't necessarily see on tape before. Running to his right, he took out a running back in the open field, which is really nice, showing some speed that I didn't necessarily see on film. So that was a positive. In coverage, you don't really want him too much there. That last play of the game that set the field goal, which I'm sure, 90% of Jets fans are happy with, he didn't really do such a good job in terms of matching the number two. There's only two threats to his side of the field. The number one ran vertical, so he only really had to worry about the number two threat. Lange aggressively jammed him, but then he let him get behind him. And what that resulted in was Hall's eyes kind of drifting to that number two, because Lange let up, or he lost the leverage battle in terms of letting the tight end get outside of him and vertical of him, where, again, Lange in that situation with 6 seconds left in the game with the Patriots on their own 40-yard line or so should have been more patient and stayed over the top of the guy to not put Hall in a bind. Which we can go to Hall, later on that as well, where Hall should have done a better job. They attacked the inexperience there. Lange didn't do a great job. Let the guy run a little bit past and distract Hall. Hall got off of his read and then tried to pass it off to Davis, and Davis was way too deep. And then that's what ended up in the Patriots kicking a 51-yard field goal from the folk hero who saved their season. So overall, good game in terms of effort from Lange. Obviously, there was some hiccups in there, especially with that last play. But in terms of earning that fourth inside linebacker job or fourth outside linebacker job, because typically he was an outside linebacker, this game, and the game previously in the year, I know he played a little more inside linebacker, but he might've just earned himself on the roster next year. The Jets are obviously gonna have a ton of turnover, on the team, and play like that earns you a roster spot. I think for a guy like Joe Douglas, who is all about those team captains, those high effort type guys. And of course, people are going to take shots at Joe Douglas for that this year and say, oh, well, where are the team captains now? You can't build a team full of leaders and expect them to lead a team in one off season when you didn't really spend a lot in free agency and it's your first draft. Like, people have to be realistic with that. So I think for a guy in Douglas who preaches that stuff, Lange might have played himself onto the 2021 Jets roster. So really, really impressive game from him.
Joe, if you were to bet on one player on this team to have a terrible game on a week-in, week-out basis, it would be Pierre Desir. And I wish that I could make that bet over at my bookie, because I'd be a rich man right now. Unfortunately, you can't bet on that, but you can bet on the full slate of games this weekend. You can also bet on the full slate of games next weekend when the Jets are back in action. You can bet on all the props, MMA, boxing, anything you want. It's all over at my bookie. And if you use the promo code OVERTIME right now, you'll get your deposit matched halfway, all the way up to $1,000. Terms are simple. You put in $200, they match you up to $100. The most is $1,000, so they would match you at $500. But it's basically free money if you're planning to gamble anyway. Go over to my bookie, bet on anything you like, just use the promo code OVERTIME. And Joe, as I said, I'd be a millionaire if I was betting against Pierre Desir every single week. Once again, terrible effort, terrible play. The only positive thing you can say about Pierre Desir, other than the fact that he's only on a one-year contract, is that he's not Tremaine Johnson. I also thought that Bless Austin played pretty poorly, and he's slowly but surely revealing himself to be nothing more than a depth piece. However, on the bright side, we did see some nice things from Ashton Davis. He looks like somebody that could be a real piece in the secondary. And Bryce Hall, we got to see him make his debut, so that was encouraging as well.
Yeah, I think if I was going to make that bet on my bookie, honestly, I was going to say Bless Austin. I think Bless Austin's been dreadful this year, too, to be completely honest. I think he makes, you know, one or two, like, highlight-type YouTube hits on a guy in a game, and that'll kind of distract people a lot, but then that they won't remember the other two tackles or three tackles that he missed. So I think Bless Austin's been pretty bad. And again, like you said, revealing himself to be nothing more than a depth piece. And listen, you know, relative to expectations, if you get a six string corner in the sixth round, I think you'd be happy with that. Like based on law of averages of how well, you know, how often six round picks work out. But he's not a starter. He's just not. Bad technique, opens his hips up too early. His understanding of leverage and how to play leverage to kind of keep his hips square. Again, corners are something really hard to explain over just voice. But his eyes aren't good. He reads the quarterback when he shouldn't read the quarterback. When he should be reading the quarterback, he's not reading the quarterback. He allows guys to attack his blind spot. His eyes aren't proper. His leverage isn't proper. His alignment in terms of like his feet being, or his feet being squarely underneath his frame, and about shoulder width apart, with good knee bend, with your hands ready. Like, he doesn't have that. He always throws his weight back onto his heels as the ball is snapped, opens up too soon, doesn't throw his tee or quarter steps like he should. Instead, he just opens his hips up. Like, there are so many things that, like, I'm like information overload right now and try to like explain it. Again, it's not something easy to explain over the phone, but he's been dreadful in my opinion. You know, versus the Bills, he gave up two touchdowns. And the week after that, with the or one or two touchdowns, it could have been two. I remember the Chiefs, he gave up a couple of touchdowns, so he's been bad. He got beat up this game again. He got beat specifically on third down at least twice. And it was both similar situations, like allowing guys to attack blind spots, opening his hips up too soon. Like, the same story that's been repeated since 2015 with Jets corners, which is why I do not and I will not ever get the hype for Kenard Wilson from Jets fans. There absolutely must have been one article that hyped up Kenard Wilson from 2015 or 16, whatever, when he was hired from the Rams, or maybe even earlier. And people have ran with that since, because they don't really know what to look for in a defensive backs coach. But I think he's been doing a poor job of his defensive, or coaching his defensive backs. So I'll never get the hype for him. But continuing on, you know, he's been bad. Bless Austin. This year has been bad. He's not as bad as Austin, in my opinion, to be completely frank, but he's still really bad. Like, again, same thing, opening his hips up too early, Obviously, we saw the play, which the complete opposite, the polar opposite of Harvey Lange. Harvey Lange, you see him go balls to the wall every single play, earning his spot. You have Pierre Desir, who lets up a catch and then is jogging next to the guy, not even attempting to make the tackle because he completely gave up and just passed it off and figured one of his other defensive backs would make the tackle, and he didn't have to anymore because the guy, you know, started to run to the inside. So a piss-poor effort from him. He got beat up this game as well. Obviously, you have the pool injury. Bryce Hall, you know, gave up a few plays. That last play of the game, like I said, he really needed to stick the number one there and carry the number one to Davis because, listen, even if that number two that I was discussing with Lange beats you in that play, again, can't describe everything over the telephone, he rallies, makes a tackle, and at that point, he tackles the tight end, and the Patriots are at the 50-yard line or the Jets 45, and now you're looking at a 67-yard field goal or a 62-yard field goal. So he has to understand situational awareness there. I thought he did a relatively decent job of staying square overall throughout the game. But again, this is a guy who hasn't played football in about a year. So he's going to be a little bit rusty. But overall, he wasn't abused in this game. And for a guy who hasn't played football in a year and is a rookie, I'm happy with that. So you have to be happy with Hall, in my opinion. Other than that, from the secondary, I thought May was pretty quiet on that play that I was discussing with Pierre Desir, where he just passed the guy off. Marcus May took a bad angle, and if Bless Olsen wasn't able to get off of his blocker, it would have been a touchdown. But Bless Olsen is the positive of him is his frame and his physicality, so he was able to get off that block and run the receiver out of bounds. But May didn't take a good angle, so May's been pretty quiet. Again, I think May's a little bit overhyped by Jets fans. I think he's a decent safety, but there was a time, even in the Bills game, where he let up a post that could have been an easy touchdown that he blew. But Quinnen Williams, created pressure and didn't allow Josh Allen to throw it. I believe the last game too, not this game, but he blew another coverage. And then there's another blown defense from the secondary in this game where I think it was Jacoby Myers deep down the field on a seam where it looked. I think it was inverted cover two, cover two invert. And Desir passed it to May, but May had to play the number one on the opposite side of the field. So he jumped the number one on the opposite side of the field. Pierre Desir thought he was going to pick up the seam route, and it was a miscommunication, and it could have been an easy 60-yard touchdown or so because of the miscommunication between those two guys. So that was bad from the secondary. Overall, one-on-one against their guys with Desir and Austin, it was bad. Hall was a positive, and then other than that, Davis a step in the right direction, for sure. The game against the Chiefs obviously got toasted by Hill. Did a bad job in that play that we described last week. And then also in the run game, he let up that touchdown as well where he could have rallied, made a tackle at the 20, 15-yard line, whatever it was. But he did a bad job closing ground. This game was playing all over the field, which is a positive, playing in the box, playing deep. He was playing all over, which is definitely a positive. Was super physical in the run game. Made a couple of tackles. He had a touchdown saving tackle on one play, and then obviously it's the Jets to the next play. They got a touchdown anyway. He had a few nice reps for sure this game after struggling the previous week. And he had the one play in the box. He had a couple plays in the box for blitzing, which I thought was a positive. So he's a guy who's going to be a versatile piece. Like he could play in the block in the box. He could play man on tight ends. He could play deep zones, which I think he needs a lot of work on, if anything. I think he's a guy you want to blitz right now and play man because you don't have to think a lot in those situations. So I think that's what you want him doing. But he had the play where he's coming off the left edge or the right edge of the defense, the left edge of the defense. I think I said that right. And the tight end chips and releases. And he gets a free shot at Cam Newton. He shows a lot of acceleration to get to Cam Newton. He drops his shoulder into Cam Newton. He lunges a little bit at him, but I don't think he lunges up in the air. It looks like he's lunging just to close ground and deliver a pop. Like, listen, you have a free shot on a quarterback who's 6'5", 235, 240. You got to pop him. Like, that's the name of the game. Like, you got to shake the quarterback, especially a guy that big. You don't want to necessarily take some steam off of your speed and your acceleration towards him because then you try to do that and, 210-pound guy versus 235, he might break your tackle. So, yeah, you got to pop him. That's the name of the game. It's freaking football. And, of course, the refs being soft and NFL being soft, he gets a penalty. I don't think it was a penalty. There's some times where I think the Jets get soft penalties. There's some times where I think they deserve their penalty. This is a situation where I don't think he deserved his penalty. So good job by him on that. I'll give him a plus on that play. So he was all over the place. So a positive game for a couple of the rookies with Hull and Davis, and big negatives, in my opinion, for Desir and Austin and May. Again, pretty quiet. And the few times he did show up, it wasn't necessarily in the most positive light, so, at least to me.
Before we go, let's try and put a few bucks in your pocket. Courtesy of my buddy Walter Cherepinski over at walterfootball.com. He's got your Sunday gambling picks. Walter, let's make some people money this Sunday. Welcome to the show, my man.
Thanks, Scott. So obviously can't bet against the Jets this week for a change. Obviously they're on a bye. But on Tuesday afternoon, I'm going to have a write-up on the site talking about why I think Trevor Lawrence won't avoid going to the Jets, as some are speculating for some reason. So look for that Tuesday afternoon. I like five games this week. Two of them feature great quarterbacks coming off a loss, which is a great angle I love to bet on. One is the Buccaneers -6 over the Panthers. So the Buccaneers are humiliated on national TV Sunday night against the Saints. They lost 38-3. They're a lot better than that. They're blowing some coverages, and I think a regular week should allow them to bounce back against the Panthers, who won't have Christian McCaffrey or Russell Okung. So I think the Buccaneers are going to win in a blowout. Also, the Seahawks +2.5 over the Rams. So we have Russell Wilson, who's 23-10 against the spread off a loss, excluding his rookie year. Kind of mirrors what Tom Brady's record is, which is 44-21 against the spread off a loss. So, you know, betting on these great quarterbacks following a defeat is usually a great angle. And I don't trust Jared Goff in a big game. So I like Seattle as well. Also, Arizona -3. This line was -1.5, too. It went up to 3 Saturday afternoon because the Bills are going to be missing some players due to testing positive. So, and some of those players are on defense, so I don't know how they're going to defend Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins and Christian Kirk and Kenyon Drake / Chase Edmonds. So I think Arizona is going to win big against the Bills team that might be a little deflated after beating Seattle in a big game. Also, like the Steelers -7.5 over the Bengals. This line, the advanced line on this game before the Week 9 games took place was -10. And now it's down to 7.5 because the Steelers almost lost to the Cowboys. I don't think the Steelers took that game seriously. And the Bengals are going to be missing some players. Geno Atkins is going to be out. They're going to be missing a couple offensive linemen. So I think the Steelers should win this game easily. I think it's going to remind us of the Ravens-Bengals game where Joe Burrow came into that game looking good, and then the Ravens just crushed them because the Ravens just had more talent than the Bengals did. I think this is kind of the same case. The final game is the Bears +3 on Monday night against the Vikings. You know, the Vikings are down some players, a couple cornerbacks, a couple of pass rushers. They're not the same team we once saw. Also, Anthony Barr. So they're missing 5 defensive starters against a Bears team that obviously just dreadful offensively. But, you know, the strength of the team, Allen Robinson, Anthony Miller, Darnell Mooney, they have good receivers. And I think they have a good matchup against the Vikings cornerbacks. The Vikings have won a couple games in a row, but they've battled some bad run defenses like the Packers and the Lions. The Bears are great against the run. They just limited Derrick Henry to about 60 rushing yards. So I think they should limit Dalvin Cook just as well. So that means Kirk Cousins, who has not won a Monday Night Football game, is going to have to throw a lot, and I don't think that's going to bode well for him. So I think the Bears pull the upset. So those are the WalterFootball.com Week 10 picks. Back to you, Scott.
Thanks, Walter, and thank you for listening. If you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes yet, if you could go ahead and do that for us, really appreciate it. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. That's Turn on the Jets Digital and turnonthejets.com.